This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
Oh yeah, once again, so good to be with you. As we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation, today in the first half hour, we're going to visit by phone with Dr. Samson Milstein. He's professor of electrical and computer engineering at the University of Massachusetts at Lowell. He received his Master of Science degree in semiconductors from State University of Odessa in the Ukraine. Interesting guy. Also got his doctorate at the University of Jerusalem in Israel, and at the age of 23, he was the youngest professor of semiconductor electronics department at the Polytechnic College of Kherson in the Ukraine. He worked for semiconductor companies in Russia and the United States, and his discoveries led to the design of the smallest transistor with extremely short channels. He is going to talk about how we need to identify individuals uniquely, and that fingerprints aren't enough, but DNA is possible, and he's got some pretty interesting ideas in that. And, of course, he's going to be speaking at the IEEE 2017 International Conference on Homeland Security's Technologies. That's going to be April 25th and 26th in Boston. You can find out more about that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. I believe this is the 16th year for the IEEE Homeland Security Technologies Conference being held in Boston. The keynote speaker this year is Kay Goss. If you have been listening to this program over the past couple of weeks, you probably heard our interview with Kay. She's president of World Disaster Management and is going to be a fascinating keynote at the conference. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set in the second half of the program, and, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, we're going to go to the phones right now, and I want to introduce you to a fascinating person, Dr. Sam Milstein. He's professor of electrical and computer engineering at the University of Massachusetts at Lowell, and is a member of the steering committee, as a matter of fact, of the Homeland Security Technology Conference that's going to go on.
Yes.
And we're so glad to have you with us, Sam. You're going to be presenting at the conference, too, I understand. Is that right?
Yes, I will.
Well, good. And I think you and I had a bit of a conversation briefly about some of the things that you're doing, but fingerprints without contact, and then identifying with DNA to identify every single person in the world. Is that what you're going to be talking about at the conference?
Yes. And the reason to talk about multimodal biometrics is very simple. Fingerprinting initially was invented more than 100 years ago by Scotland Yard. And this is still one of the most spread and often used biometric identification. However, this technology has its limitations. One significant limitation is that whenever you put the finger on the surface of the fingerprint reader, without any pushing, without any pressing, you're essentially changing up to 15% the distance between the ridges which constitute the fingerprint. And that by itself, because you can't repeat yourself on the same kind of time, much time after time. That is why sometimes you need to open your computer or even telephone 3-4 times. However, telephone or personal computer is an issue which is kind of your personal business. However, when you look at the fingerprint as a major technology used by law enforcement in different countries against terrorists, there, misreading between the registered finger and taken actually just very now, that is significant limitation. But talking limitations of this technology, if you would look at your finger when you leave the shower, you would see that your finger essentially wrinkled. Mm-hmm. When you look at your finger when you were at age 11, or at a time when you were fingerprint as a kid, and when you are 40-year-old, this is already a different finger. Another group of limitations is your physical conditions. Sometime being sick changes essentially the fingerprint. Also, people are not aware of this. Now, of all the biometric methods, fingerprint included, there is only one biometrics which is absolutely solid and not subjected to the age, conditions, physical condition of the person. This is DNA. Mm-hmm. When you have DNA recorded and the DNA is taken, say you're entering the airport, this would be absolutely the same DNA whether you're age 15 or you're 20 years older. Mm-hmm. However, the trouble with that one is that it takes significant time to identify DNA. It's not as instant as fingerprinting or voice recognition or retina recognition.
Sure.
That is why at the Advanced Electronic Technology Center here, we are trying to combine something which equip law enforcement with ability to do very quickly the identification. How we see this? Fingerprint? Yeah, that's instant. So if somebody enters the airport or border cross point, cross-checking point, and takes the fingerprint examination, and people, law enforcement, are sure that that's absolutely, with no doubt, the same thing, fine. But if the doubt shows up, then they need to call in much more reliable technology, and that is, as I said, DNA. So what we're trying to get with DNA, probably to have DNA analysis for these applications to be done 30 minutes, maximum 40, 45 minutes. And this is something which is not very simple, because typical DNA analysis might take from a day to a couple of days to a week.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do, we're not changing the DNA analysis. We're trying to sort out those which would be quick confirmation that, yes, this is a DNA of the same person.
Well, this certainly leads to a bunch of questions. And you're indicating then that that fingerprinting has been the gold standard now for 100 years or so, but it is really then sort of unreliable, because as you press the fingerprint to a surface and it changes the dimensions, or it changes as a person ages from a youngster to an older person, then can you really get reliable convictions with fingerprints alone? That would be a first question, and then the second one, yes, the DNA. But you're trying to do then is to get more rapid analysis of DNA so that it doesn't take several days or a week, that it can be done on the spot, say at a border crossing or something of that nature, in looking for the person. But then again, don't you you have to have some sort of body fluid or some sort of something that's invasive in order to get the DNA? Isn't that correct?
No, you're absolutely right. However, the example, the sample of something is very simple. You take a swab and put it in the mouth of the person, and saliva is exactly what would be the object of identification. That is quick. Yeah, making a step back to fingerprinting. Well, of course, I don't want to sound scary, but yes, it is not very reliable. Normally, when the question about pre-registered fingerprint and actual fingerprint comes, I happen to spend hours and hours watching how in the police labs the special experts are working with this, because there is doubt that this is the same fingerprint, and there is all kind of very special algorithms to justify it, to justify that that's the right one. Still, you're absolutely right that fingerprints are not that reliable as they are presented for public, but I would say it's better than nothing.
So that's really
better.
That's all we really have then. That's all we really have then with fingerprints is better than nothing. I mean, that doesn't sound to me like, sending somebody to the death chamber with a science that is just better than nothing. That's really pretty bizarre.
Yeah, Colonel, you're touching something which is in the legal domain, and that by itself is a very interesting story. Those of us who work with this technology, we are aware of the fact that Supreme Court of United States made different years recently four definitions that fingerprinting should not be admissible if the lawyer which defends the criminal says, I want to remove this as the evidence. The court should automatically go. And typically, the lawyers who are kind of updated, they know about this. And I happen to hear how in a court the lawyer says, hey, look, you registered the finger of my client when you arrested him for drive driving. And your policeman was pushing this finger against the scanner and took the thing. Now you're coming from the stage where somebody is killed, and you're saying that the fingerprint on a window frame in this house is the same fingerprint as the one which was done when you arrested my client. I demand that you remove this, because these are, by definition, because of pressure, two different fingerprints. Mm. And the court is obligated to remove.
That's fascinating. I had no idea. And, of course, we don't see this covered anywhere. So you're really giving us some deep inside information. Now, did you say that you were working on a way of extracting fingerprints without pressure?
This came up when the manufacturer of guns, Smith & Wesson, came to us and said, we want that at least our equipment, our guns, would not be used by not authorized hand. And we started to work. And it is there. We quickly discovered in a combination of something like taking 150 fingerprints, that, oh boy, the only way to circumvent the recognition is to water the recognition algorithm. This is what all these companies like telephone companies are doing. Apple, Samsung, Motorola. The only thing is that some of these guys are decent. What I mean by this, if you buy Apple, you wouldn't have this warning. However, if you would buy Samsung, any Galaxy 5, 7, well, whatever, if you would buy the Motorola, you would see an interesting thing when you start to use the telephone. That would be said that here is the fingerprint recognition, and it's good one. However, much more reliable is the password of 11, 12 characters. Why is that? Because the telephone company, in order for you not to use your fingerprint as a recognition element and then do it 5, 7, 10 times until you open this, they water the algorithm. They instead of checking 27 points in the algorithm, which is called minutiae algorithm, they're checking 8. Mm-hmm. And then it's, if you didn't open it on the first time, you will open it on the second, might be on the fourth. Mm-hmm. And the scandals with Apple telephones were so noisy at the time when fingerprint was introduced there. We, talking telephones, we developed, and the University of Massachusetts has about 6 patents, where we developed a technology which allowed the telephone to have a fingerprint recognition without touch, contactless, touchless.
Okay.
And we're talking to the companies which might start to produce this. Means not me, but the university.
Well, the question that leads me to, you know, getting back to the gun situation. So somebody needs a gun in a hurry for self-defense. Could be a police officer. Could be a civilian that is trying to protect his family. If he's got to put his fingerprint on there several times because there, you know, 16 points and then 8 points and then 4 points and then pretty soon he's able to get the gun to work. By the time that happens, the criminal could get away, or the people could be dead. That's got to be preposterous then.
You're absolutely, absolutely right. You're looking exactly into the core of this. Now, there is also some other things related to the usage of the guns. Mm-hmm. If you would look at our country, U.S., you would find out that the policeman, when he is forced to pull his gun, he is required not to shoot. He is required first to put his finger along the barrel, the trigger finger, along the barrel of the gun.
Oh?
That was the idea of Smith & Wesson, put the recognition system on the barrel of the gun. But if you look at the requirements from a policeman, say, in the state of Israel, if you pull the gun, you shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Means there is no such a thing, pull your finger there, shoot in the air, whatever. No. If you feel that some dangerous things are coming with regard to your life, shoot.
Of course.
Okay. Right. And that is a requirement. This is kind of a regulation, not only for law enforcement there. If you're civil, you're just a citizen of the country. And if you are pulling out your gun, that means that something is serious. Shoot.
Absolutely. There would be no reason to pull a gun if you weren't going to shoot. And so it should be pulled legitimate people. Absolutely. I could agree with that. And you're trying to say that particular policy is active in Israel but is being circumvented in the United States, that police should pull their guns and not shoot?
Yes. Ooh. Yes, absolutely. I do not know whether you know the dark sides of my biography. I was living, I left Moscow, I am from Russia. I was living in Israel about 10 years, being a professor of a university there, having my small 38 caliber of Smith & Wesson.
Mm.
Okay, and I know all these regulations, kind of not reading about this or listening to this. I know that because I was Israel, you probably know that the only one country in the entire world which requires biometric ID, travel passport, driving license, whatever, this is Israel, and a fingerprint. And they slightly improved their touch technology. They're using something not capacitive sensors, but that's too complicated for this interview. But there is the only country where everyone by law is obligated to have ID supported by biometric ID.
Mm. Well, this is a good time to tell the listeners that, of course, you received your Master of Science degree in semiconductors from the State University of Odessa, and that's in the Ukraine, and then your PhD from the University of Jerusalem in Israel, and at the age of 23, you were the youngest professor of semiconductor the electronics department at the Polytechnic College at Kherson in the Ukraine. So, Dr. Samuel Milstein, you're certainly a very accomplished person, and now we have you at the University of Massachusetts at Lowell, and of course going to be at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference. It's coming up the 25th and 26th. Of April. So good to have you there. But I want to get back to another question now. Let's get away from the fingerprints for a minute. We get on to this DNA. How in the world are we going to be incorporating the DNA for positive identification?
Technically, the procedure is very simple. Say you're entering the airport and your fingerprint, when you're coming, apparently, if you're a foreigner or a visitor, you put your two fingers on a scanner. And the reason two, not one, because the probability of recognition is better. But if your fingerprint is questionable or evokes questions, then you're brought to a room where a medical individual, essentially, take a swab and put it in your mouth, get the sample of saliva. And from here, start the identification of your DNA. Now, DNA is a very complex thing. Let me say, even before I say something, that I know nothing about DNA in depth. My wife is a doctor, she educates me, and we're working with Medical School of University of Massachusetts on this. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't take the freedom to say that I understand the subject of DNA. However, I would allow myself to mention the following. There are methods of analysis of DNA. What we are trying to do, we're not going to change these methods. We will try to cut their numbers, and we will try to stick to the most reliable, if you want, to cut off the time for analysis.
Okay, well, that leads to some more questions. I mean, we want to forget fingerprints, forget face recognition, because DNA is so exact. And it isn't a matter of of just not harvesting DNA, but doing it rapidly. And I'm wondering, Dr. Milstein, if that can be accomplished. And I guess we'll discuss that in the next half hour. So I hope everybody sticks around. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Mother Teresa, the good you do today, people may forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give your best anyway. In the end, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway.